You're listening to Asbury University's Chapel Podcast, recorded live from our campus in Wilmore, Kentucky. Asbury's Chapel Service hosts speakers from around the world to inspire academic excellence and spiritual vitality. We hope you enjoy today's message.
It was about 110 degrees outside on a very hot Tuesday morning in June. The air inside our car was thick with a palpable tension, and we moved in convoy, cautiously making our way through the streets of northern Iraq. On my left-hand side were fortresses, and there were soldiers inside them with guns pointing that way. And on my right were trenches, and inside those trenches were also soldiers with guns pointing to the right at Syria. And every 10 minutes, we would jerk in the car to yet another military checkpoint as they stopped our vehicle. You know, I'd long left my husband and children behind back in Uganda to be there in that moment, documenting the stories of women who had been captured and forced to become ISIS wives. They were now free, but forever marked by what they had endured. And a chemical gas weapons mask, I remember, sat on my lap as the driver's warning from earlier was ringing in my ears as he said, make sure you stay within 200 yards of this vehicle at all times. So how on earth did I end up in that situation? Well, Asbury, it all started with an absolutely reckless promise I made to God when I was about 19 years old. I will refuse you nothing. And it turns out he really ran with that. Good morning. I am Helen Manson, and as Ashlyn mentioned, I'm a New Zealand based humanitarian photographer and storyteller. And my job is really just to bring to life how God is at work around the world through incredible charities and nonprofits. And I hope you guys know that Asbury's reputation reaches far and wide. It came all the way down under, and it's an absolute honor to be with you this morning. Thank you. As I was praying about what to share, I felt God say this: just tell them your story, and then light a fire under them to go write their stories with me. Because if there's one thing I know, it's that the only story worth telling is the one where you and I surrender, where we lay down our lives and let His story unfold. Now, I've listened to a fair few of your excellent podcasts, by the way, before I came, and I hope today builds on them. Think of me as your guinea pig, if you like, from New Zealand. A 20-year kind of fast-forward glimpse into what can happen when one surrenders and tries their very best to refuse Him nothing. I will be the first to tell you I have gotten so much wrong, but I sincerely hope this morning through my story, you'll see how God can weave the tapestry of our lives, including yours, if we let Him. Let me take you back to where it all began. So I'm the oldest girl to three younger brothers, which basically means I spent my childhood in a lot of heated fellowship, also known as full contact discipleship. And although I was born in New Zealand, I actually lived in California until I was 13, and then Sydney, Australia, until I was 15, thanks to my parents being pastors. And reflecting on life as a third culture kid, I came to realize that my parents' real goal in moving us so much was just to ensure I had the most ridiculous accent known to mankind. The first time I truly felt God speak to me was during one of those moves. And Psalm 139 says, if I rise on the wings of the dawn, if I settle on the far side of the sea, even there your hand will guide me, your right hand will hold me fast. And that promise has anchored me through 10 international moves and counting. But at 18, after a series of poor choices, and even worse boyfriends, including a scenario where I unintentionally dated two brothers, God intervened, God intervened. Thank you, Lord, when I was 19. And he introduced me to this guy, the man who had me at Hello, Tim. And our first official date was an Oreo milkshake at Denny's, the diner Denny's, because he is all class, that boy. Tim had actually lived in West Africa as a missionary kid from the time he was 5 until he was about 14. And on our first date, he told me, you know what, if you wouldn't be willing to live in Africa, that's a deal breaker for me. And I said, no problem, my deal breaker is adoption. 3 years later, these two got married. I was 21 and a half, and I feel like the half really counts. I graduated from university 19 years ago with a Bachelor of Communication Studies. And I worked in fashion, beauty, and lifestyle PR for big corporate agencies with huge global brands, and I loved it. It felt like my career was going up and up. But then one day, I came home, and Tim said to me that he felt like God was prompting him to look into moving overseas. And I said, absolutely not. I love our life here. I love our job and our home. And naturally, he went to an overseas job fair, and he got a job, didn't he? He sure did. He was offered a role in the desert of Dubai. And when he got back, how long did I have to decide? How long? 24 hours. Yep. At 11:45 p.m., and with 15 minutes to spare, I desperately asked God for a song or a verse, and he gave me this from Isaiah 43. Forget the former things. Do not dwell on the past. See, I'm doing a new thing. Now it springs up. Do you not perceive it? I'm making a way in the wilderness and streams in the desert. Yep. Was I a happy camper, Asbury? No. No, I was not. I moved kicking and screaming because I hate change. Within 3 months, I was in full-blown depression mode, obsessively eating Doritos and Oreos and making Tim emotionally pay every day for what he did to me. It felt like such, at that time, an oppressive, unfamiliar Muslim city. But God did what only he can do and softened my heart, teaching me to love that city and those people. And soon I began to thrive. So a year goes by and we were torn. Do we stay here and continue to keep earning amazing money? Or do we move to Uganda to volunteer? And so we prayed and debated and procrastinated, and it got so bad that Tim's mom actually flew over to Dubai, put us in separate bedrooms, and told us not to come out until you've heard from God and he speaks. And so 2 hours later, we kind of both sheepishly emerged from the bedroom, holding a piece of paper with one word on it. And turns out God had spoken to both of us from the same verse as we were in those separate bedrooms. He said, seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things will be added unto you. The word? Go. We spent 5 months volunteering in Uganda with Watoto, an organization caring for some of the country's most vulnerable women and children. Tim was a teacher, and I worked in marketing, and my camera was glued to my sweaty face every day, and I was in my element. But the irony is that I was the least likely person to end up in humanitarian work. Growing up, you guys, I couldn't even handle sad stories. I barely handled the news. Tim once tried to get me to watch a documentary on child soldiers, and I flat out refused. Shopping at the mall, flipping through home magazines, that was more of my vibe. But two things happened in Uganda that changed that. In August 2010, I was sitting at a bus stop in downtown Kampala, and hungry, I pulled out an apple from my bag. And the boy next to me just like had never seen an apple before, and so he picked up the apple and he just bit in it from the top down. Like he ate it, like the core, the seeds, everything. He just went down. And we just laughed and laughed, and I invited him back to dinner. And every week, he would come back to our house for dinner. And one night, just really casually over spaghetti, he says to me that he used to be a child soldier. And I put down my fork. See, up until that point, I'd, as you know, deliberately avoided learning about child soldiers. They were kids as young as 10 that were forced to fight for the Lord's Resistance Army. These children were ripped from their homes and witnessed awful things happen to their families and were then forced to do awful things to others. And yet, here was my friend, someone I now cared about deeply, sharing his story, trusting me with it so vulnerably that it honestly changed everything, because he was the human behind the headlines. And all the fear in my heart took a back seat to this boy in front of me, Ivan. His story was no longer in the news. It was in my living room. I then started learning all I could about child soldiers, and today it feels like I'm working with a new issue every other month, whether it's famine or disasters or human trafficking. And those issues then become personal. P.S., this is actually Ivan today. He stayed with us last month when we were back in Uganda. He is now a single dad of three working in construction, and the impact he's had on my life would be really hard to overstate. The second thing that happened was meeting our sponsor child, Willifred, through Compassion. And I used to get his letters, and they just used to make me laugh because he would say things like, "How are you and your family at large? What crops are you harvesting at the moment?" And I'd stick them on my fridge and think, "Oh, that's cute," and forget about it. But one day, the photo on the fridge came to life and became a beating heart right in front of me. I remember Willifred then invited us back into his family home, and as we walked into his house, he's like, "Oh, see that goat over there tied to that tree? Yeah, you bought me that for my birthday." I was like, "Oh, that made it? I didn't realize that actually would happen." Then he pulls us inside and he shows me his family photo album, and it has 30 photos, and he's from a family of 8. And do you know who was in there? We were. Our photo had made it. I didn't even know if the letters made it, let alone the photos. And not only had they made it, they were taking pride of place. When we returned home to New Zealand, I started volunteering with Compassion, also known as Tear Fund in New Zealand. And a year later, they offered me a job there. Now, remember, I absolutely loved my corporate job. But when I asked God about laying that all down, He led me to this verse in Esther. "For if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance will arise from another place. But who knows that you have come for such a time as this?" And I just took that as God saying, "Look, Helen, I'm going to find someone fabulous for this role if you say no. But maybe, just maybe, it's your time to step up. Time to refuse Him nothing again." Just before I started, I took 2 6-week photography courses to transition from film to digital. And up until then, photography had just been a fun hobby. And from that moment, I'd switched from fashion weeks to famines. And I'm forever grateful I did. My first day on the job for Tear Fund was 13 years ago in Kolkata, India. And this is actually one of the first photos I ever took. And during that week, my boss had a family emergency, and she had to race back to New Zealand, and she kind of looked me up and down, and she said, "Hey, how would you feel about just whipping over to Bangladesh for a minute there and getting some photos and stories for our next campaign?" I was like, "Sure, sounds good." So I head over there. The country is in the middle of a military coup. I'm surrounded by UN peacekeeping troops in the airport. They drove me 8 hours into the depths of the jungle, and I showered with a cup and a bucket, slept in a house with no door, and a bedroom with no door. Good times, good times. But that first trip was the beginning of what is now my ongoing life's work. And since then, I've had almost every immunization available on the planet for every possible tropical disease. And I've traveled to 47 countries working with 50 incredible charities. A few of my most memorable moments on the job would be traveling inside a refugee truck as newly arriving refugees came across from Congo, hosting a TV journalist for the 1-year anniversary of the Rohingya crisis in Bangladesh, 1 million refugees are packed into 4 square miles here, entering into Mosul and Sinjar in Iraq, and spending 7 years of my life living and working in Uganda, as well as watching and learning about the work of child slaves on Lake Volta in Ghana. And over the years, guys, I have feared for my life at times. I have wept with the people I've interviewed, felt more alive than ever, and thank God every single time for that privilege. Oh, P.S., here's a behind-the-scenes look at the airports that I usually check into and what they look like. And the roads. I chose to walk across the bridge in this instance. That's Tim driving that car. Later that evening, I retired to the luxury bathroom. Sometimes there are snakes that join us on assignment, and other times I end up in hospital with pneumonia and the blood gets sucked back up the pipe. Another look behind the scenes. This is me kneeling in open sewage in Indonesia on a recent assignment, but here's the photo I was taking. So I'd love to show you some of the photos that have meant the most to me over the years through this really short video. Oh, okay, this kid, this was the first time he saw a white person. Anyways, I hope you see God at work in this little short video. Into my role at TFN, we were in church when Tim got an out-of-the-blue text from friends of ours in Uganda asking us if we'd come back to help them with their charity. By then, we'd also been trying for a biological child. Of course, we looked into it when we went to Uganda in 2010, but we were back in New Zealand, and after a year with no success, we were unexpectedly told we'd need IVF. and we were placed on an 18-month free government wait list. With 6 months left on that wait list, it was time to refuse him nothing again. Trusting God, we put IVF on hold, took a year's leave, and left at Christmas. Before we went, I attended a baby prayer night, and normally 30-plus women would show up, but that night, I was the only one that came, and three women prayed over me. Meanwhile, the New Zealand IVF team warned us if we weren't back in a year, we would forever lose our spot. We arrived in Uganda in January 2014, and 1 month later, on an early drive to South Sudan, we got a call. A newborn baby needed a family. I looked at Tim, he looked at me. I jumped out of the car, hailed a motorbike, and within 9 minutes, met my daughter-to-be. She was 6 days old. I had nothing to my name, no diapers, no bottle, no clothes. The very next day, a woman I had met one time knocked on my door and said, "Hey, super random, last night a package arrived from America. It's got everything someone would need for a baby for the first year of their lives, three of everything. Do you know anyone that would need that?" 1 year of unrelenting stress and countless miracles later, we were granted leave to return to New Zealand to do IVF. And the day after arriving, we went to move back into our house, only to find it was unlivable. The tenant had almost destroyed our home, leaving us with tens of thousands in repairs and barely any insurance. And the next day, I started IVF, and the doctor said to me, "Just make sure you're in a really calm, stress-free environment for this to have a chance of working." With one viable embryo and 12 months to conceive, give birth, and get back, Eva was born. After her birth, this is moments after she was born. After her birth, I struggled with severe postpartum anxiety, but with prayer and medical help, we moved back right on time. She was exactly 3 months old. On our 10-year anniversary, I turned to Tim sheepishly again and said, I think there's one more baby out there meant to be in our family. And 8 months later, God led us to a little boy called Maz. After 7 years in Uganda, adopting both kids and traveling the world for humanitarian photography, while my husband led an organization providing trauma counseling for refugees, we returned to New Zealand in search of a more sustainable way to continue on in this work. And the day our youngest started school, I breathed a huge sigh of relief until that afternoon when I got a call. A baby had been born at 27 weeks, just 2 pounds. His mama couldn't care for him, and they needed someone to do kangaroo care, which is where you like hold them on your chest, for 3 hours a day for 3 months. Tim was off grid on a hunting trip, out of cell service, and so I did what any wife would do. I said yes. Now, at this point, you would be forgiven for thinking that Tim is an absolute saint, and he is. I like to joke with him that I have 4 different kids to 4 different dads, and he just doesn't find that funny. 109 days later, we walked out of the hospital. Manson, party of 6. He was still on oxygen and a feeding tube. And 2 days later, we both got COVID and landed back in the hospital. Oh, and then I got NITS. 1 year later, we were able to reunite him with his incredible birth family. And giving him back was the hardest thing I have ever done in my life. And yet, God is faithful, because the story doesn't end there. His birth family invited us into a unique, stretchy family arrangement. And now he spends nearly a week with us every month and holidays too. And he's about to turn 3 this coming weekend. Which brings me to today. This is my family now. Hope is the kind of kid that has 10 books on the go at once. She hates salad, and she recently asked me why I have whiskers. When Eva was little, her teacher asked her what I did for a job, and she said, "My mom shoots people in the fields." Maz's class does news each Monday, and one day he said, "My daddy's in the Ukraine." And the teacher said, "Why? Why is dad in the Ukraine?" And he's like, "I don't know, probably relaxing." And baby A, well, he's pure sunshine. And after 13 years in my dream job, my actual dream job, you guys, at Tier Funds, God is calling me to lay it all down again, to refuse him nothing and step into a new chapter. In 2 weeks, I finish up, and by Monday, I'll be starting a new job. Am I shaking in my boots to be the global story lead for IJM? Yes, I am. Absolutely. But there's just something about that Jesus, guys. He is so worthy of it all. He's so worthy of our surrender. He cares deeply for you. And I know that sometimes in the moment, it can feel like the strands of your life aren't coming together. Like you got the clearance rack tapestry with the frayed edges and the hole in the middle. Or that you missed out altogether. But I hope as you've got a glimpse into 20 years ahead through my story, you see it now. How God can weave everything together. All your experiences, heartaches, and opportunities to weave a beautiful story in your life. I hope you recognize the threads he's weaving over you this morning. I hope you sense his voice behind you and his presence in the smallest details of your life. Guys, nothing is random in his kingdom. Everything that happens fits into the tapestry he is making. And I hope you know there's flexibility and creativity and no mistake, too big or small. His invitation is always there. Let him write your story. This morning, are you surrendered? Or have you settled into comfort? If you're anything like me, you wrestle with fear and control and the pull of safety, but surrender is the antidote. Our culture glorifies ease and security, but Jesus does not. You know, Bob Goff said, every day God invites us on an adventure. He asks us what it is he's made us to love, what it is that captures our attention, and what feeds that deep, indescribable need in our souls to experience the richness of the world he made. And then, leaning over us, he whispers, "Let's go do that together." Are you open, as the band joins me, to a reckless promise this morning? To do your best to refuse him nothing. To get back on the altar and say, "I surrender everything, God." We just sung that song. Did you mean it? Did we mean it? To learn and relearn all that he made you for. And as we close, I'd like to invite you all to stand. Thank you. And if you feel comfortable, would you pray with me in your mind as we close? Let's pray. God, we come before you this morning, climbing back onto the altar. We surrender our best laid plans, our hopes, our dreams. We are hungry for so much more of you. We ask for your voice to be our guide, saying, "This is the way, walk in it." We ask for your word to be a lamp to our feet and a light to our path. We want to be people that refuse you nothing. Do all you have in mind, God. Amen.